So this guy is talking to the one above, and he asks the one above, he says, why is it that you made my wife to be so beautiful? And Hashem says, because I wanted you to love and cherish your wife, and therefore I made her to be especially beautiful so that you would appreciate her and love her. And why did you make her so kind? I want your house to be a warm, welcoming house, Hashem says. Be so warm and welcoming, and therefore I wanted her to be kind to you. Together you build a beautiful place for people to come. And why did you make her such a good cook? So Hashem says, I wanted her to be able to invite people to your home, and they should all enjoy, and they should have Shabbat meals. That's one question, one more question. I'm not complaining, but why is she so a little bit not so smart? So Hashem said, well, I had to get her to agree to marry you. So, question is this, Josh. How do we get people in our life to feel, our children, people in our life, how do we give them strength? How do we make them feel strong and proud of who they are? And to give them the ability to be confident and to value their strengths and to go forward. It could be, you know, people very close to you. You love them very much, and they're good friends, but they feel very, very weak. They don't find themselves. So the question is, what can you do to give it, to empower someone? So this week's Torah portion, read about the donations that were given to build a tabernacle. And the Torah says that earlier, a few weeks ago, we read about the mitzvah to give the donations. Hashem gave Moshe, the Jewish people should do it. But in this Torah portion, actually, Moshe does give over the mitzvah to the Jewish people. So that's why there's a lot of repetition. It seems like a lot of repetition in this Torah portion. The Jewish people actually gave the silver and the gold and the copper. And there's a verse towards the end of all the donations. It says the leaders of the tribe, they gave the stones that were used in the choshen, in the breastplate, of the Kohen Gadol. The leaders of the tribes gave, which was quite a large gift, because those stones were very precious stones. But the question is, why did the Torah put their donations last? If their donations were so expensive, so precious, why were their donations given last, or mentioned last? So Rabbi Nassan says, Rashi quotes Rabbi Nassan, who says, that the leaders of the tribe, the Torah writes their name, the leaders, and it takes out the letter Yud from their name. Why is it take out the letter Yud? Because they were lazy. Why were they lazy? They said to themselves, let the community give whatever they give. And whatever they cannot give, we will make up the loss. We'll make the shortfall. Whatever everyone else is not giving, we'll cover the shortfall. So that's why there's a letter, the word Nesim, the word leaders is missing, the letter Yud, to say that they weren't doing the right thing, they're missing the letter Yud, they're missing something. They shouldn't have had that attitude towards building Hashem's house. Although they gave a very expensive gift, but it's not always what you give; it's also how you give. So because they gave at the end, and they weren't conscious of they should have looked at it differently. They should have felt, hey, we want to be part of this. We want to be part of this, Mitch. We're excited about this. Let's be part of it. We want to do something. Instead of like, let them do it. If they don't finish, we'll give. That's why there's a letter Yud missing from their name saying that they didn't do the right thing. That's why when it came to the inauguration of the temple, when the temple was actually built, it was the leaders of the tribe who came first to offer sacrifices. Why are the ones? They're the ones who offered sacrifices because they were last. The Jewish people actually gave everything. There was nothing left to give. Since there's nothing left to give, so they gave the stones for the breastplate, but that was the last thing to be given. And the reason they gave that was because nothing else to give. Everything was finished. It's actually interesting the way the Torah says everything was finished. The Torah uses seemingly Torah says a contradiction. It seems the Torah says Hamlach Ha'isadayim, the work was enough. Then the Torah says Vahisa, there was an excess, there was a surplus. So the question is, which one was it? Was there enough or was there a surplus? Hey Josh, how come by the golden calf there was no surplus? By the tabernacle there was a surplus? Because you know who was collecting by the tabernacle? Moses. Who was collecting by the golden calf? people leave a little bit more, much, their behavior leaves much to be desired. So there's a surplus, they took it to themselves. That's the joke. Anyways.
Yeah, but I'm smart enough to not believe in a golden calf and God just created all these miracles. I'm not going to go against God. I'm not that dumb.
Good for you, Josh. I hope God sends you lots of gold and you should have that challenge. Anyways, so...
But I need to see God first. I haven't seen God. Maybe if I was on Mount Sinai, I'd think otherwise, but I haven't seen God in my life. So if you present me gold and you say God, I'm going to go with the gold, unfortunately. But if I see God, I might go with the God. I might go with God.
So here's my advice.
Yeah.
My advice is when the gold comes,
yeah.
Don't think it's from the calf. All
right, I'll give it to Daniel. Daniel.
All right, anyways, we're moving right along. So the Or HaChaim says it seems to be a contradiction. One place it says it was enough, and then the next word it says it was extra. Which one? Was it enough, just enough, or was it extra? So he says something fascinating. He says every Jew donated to the tabernacle. There was leftovers. There was excess. Hashem made a miracle. Hashem didn't want anyone's gift not to be included. So therefore Hashem made a miracle and he caused all the gold and the silver and the copper and the wood to somehow merge miraculously into the structure of the tabernacle. So I don't know exactly how it worked, but I watch enough cartoons to guess. You know, the gold and the silver and the copper just like exactly. So that's what the Or HaChaim says. There's another explanation. Paras Yosef, he says, it was left over. What was left over? He says, you always find the Jewish people at the forefront of philanthropy. All the way to Jewish people are giving all over the world in all kinds of causes, from the most necessary things to things that are not so necessary, to saving the whales, to saving... But the philanthropy comes from our father Abraham, and that's what the Torah says. It was left over. What was left over? Their kindness was left over. That their kindness is in us. It was an excess. It was a surplus. It remained in Shlomo. Why is Shlomo such a nice, kind guy? It's because it was an excess. It stays. It didn't go away. That's what the Paras Yosef says. The question is this, though. Think of, put yourself in the shoes of someone who is trying to collect funds to do something. Someone's trying to build a synagogue. Come join us, Chaim, little Torah. It's kosher today. Yeah, yeah, keep her. Someone's trying to build a synagogue. Someone's trying to build a library. Trying to build a school. And he tries to collect funds for the library, the school, the synagogue. Sounds familiar? Anyways, it's not an easy thing to do. Imagine, if this ever happened to me, I really wouldn't mind if it did. But imagine if I client collect funds. I try to collect funds for whatever it is. Someone says to you, hey, I'll take care of whatever the shortfall is. I'll take care of the shortfall. You collect whatever you collect, whatever is left, whatever you don't collect, I'll pay for. How would you feel if you had to collect the tzedakah? I know I would feel. I'd feel great. Done. I'll collect from here. I won't collect from here. But this guy says he'll pay for everything. He'll pay for everything. It's fantastic. So why was it so bad? What the leaders of the tribe said, they said, let the community give what they can give, and we will give the rest. Why was that so terrible? It seemed to be a great offer. Oh, so the Amshin, there was a time when the previous Rebbe was in Warsaw. And in Warsaw, there was also another tzaddik named the Amshinov Rebbe, the mayor of Amshinov. The Amshinov Rebbe had an interesting concept of time. They'd pray the morning prayers in the evening prayers in the morning. They do have Havdalah, like on Tuesday. Like they always are prolonging whatever it is. Can you imagine? It's like everyone else is like praying Sunday morning with tefillin, and they're still in the middle of Shal Shudas. They're still in the middle of the Shabbos afternoon meal. That's how the way they don't work the same clock as everybody else. That's the way the tzaddikim of Amshinov traditionally, that was their custom. This chassid of Amshinov, he visited the previous Rebbe, and the previous Rebbe asked him, tell me something of the Amshinov Rebbe. What is Amshinov Rebbe? Tell me a thought from the Amshinov Rebbe. So the chassid said, I'll tell you about he didn't really want to say, but the previous Rebbe pressed, he should tell him something. So he told the previous Rebbe the following idea. He asked him this question, what was so bad about what the leaders of the tribe, what was so bad about that? So the Amshinov Rebbe said like this, what's the function of a leader? What's the goal? What is a leader supposed to be about? He's supposed to inspire the people. He's supposed to, first of all, see who the people are. He's supposed to understand who they are. He's supposed to appreciate who they are. So if the leaders of the tribe saw, what did they think? They thought the Jewish people wouldn't give, right? They said, they're not going to, What happened? They said, let them give what they're going to give. We'll give the rest. So they thought they're not going to finish the whole job. We'll be able to participate because they're not going to finish the whole job. They didn't properly assess who the Jewish people were. Since they didn't hear and understand who the Jewish people were, that's why the letter Yud was missing from their name. We'll see in a second what the letter Yud is about. But they were missing. They're missing the idea of a leader. The leader has to understand and appreciate who their people are. And also, the word Nasi doesn't say Nusu'im. It says Nisi'im. What's a Nasi about? That's about lifting up the people. If indeed the people weren't going to give what was necessary to build a tabernacle, so then you should lift them up. You should encourage them. So that's what's missing, a letter Yud from their name. The letter Yud is the smallest of all the Hebrew letters, but and represents the oneness of Hashem. It says in Tanya, the letter of Yud, the first letter of Hashem's name is letter Yud, and it's connected to the wisdom of Hashem. The wisdom of Hashem, Tanya explains, is a place where there it's revealed, the Chachma, the wisdom of Hashem, what that really means is, it's a revelation. Just like when our wisdom, we open an eye to the truth, the wisdom of Hashem is a window to the absolute truth. There's nothing besides Hashem. So the leaders of the tribe, they were missing the Yud. They didn't feel the goodness in the people they were meant to lead. And therefore, they said, first of all, let them give what they can give, and then they will do the rest. They didn't really feel who the Jewish people were, and they didn't look at their own responsibility. They're meant to lift them up, and therefore they took a back seat. And that was their mistake. There's an interesting concept in the Talmud from Rab Nassim. It's called Shibudah de Rab Nassim. Shibudah de Rab Nassim means like this. If I owe Beryl money, and Beryl owes Shaul money, so Rab Nassim says, I owe Shaul money. Halacha views, if I owe you money, you owe him money, Shaul can go directly to me to collect. Halacha doesn't view the debt as being separate, two separate debts, according to Rab Nassim. If I owe you and you owe Shaul, I owe Shaul money directly. So according to that, Rab Nassim was saying that even if they did inspire the Jewish people to give, but that doesn't take them away from their own responsibility to give. Fine, they could inspire others, but that doesn't, just because you could inspire others doesn't mean you have to roll up your sleeves. You don't have to roll up your sleeves and help and do something yourself. But there's a far more profound point over here, relevant to each of us. Each of us is a leader in some sense, a leader in our family, leader of our friends. Everyone has influence on others. So in order to be able to lead someone, in order to be able to empower someone, you have to be able to understand them, you have to be able to lift them up. A lot of times we don't see the good in our children, our spouse, and our friends, not because they don't have it, it's because in our own glasses, we're looking at glasses which have some marks in them, which have some dirt in them. Because they have dirt, in our glasses are ego. Because of our ego, we hear things and we see things in others that aren't really there. It's really a reflection on what's going on inside of ourselves. When someone says something, your child says something, and you react right away, you don't really think who they are. You're losing a huge opportunity. Let me give you an example. Child says, "I hate mommy. I hate mommy." It's an amazing opportunity. Okay, let's use you, Josh. I think it's dangerous to use you, but let's keep on going. When a child says, "I hate mommy," the child is saying something. Why is he using those words? So some people say, "You're not allowed to say that, you hate mommy." It doesn't tell the child anything. I'm not allowed to. I mean, I hate mommy. What do you mean? I do hate mommy.
Why do you hate mommy?
Oh, so there's, what you're doing is, by asking the child how they feel, describe to me a little more, the child will discover, doesn't hate mommy, he's angry at mommy. He's angry at mommy because mommy didn't buy him a shirt, and because mommy didn't buy him his favorite toothpaste, because mommy didn't buy him his pajamas, whatever it was, he's angry at mommy. So you have an opportunity to teach a child that there's a difference. I also, sometimes you don't do things that I want. As a parent, you sometimes disappoint with things that I would like you to do. And it's really important that the child feels that you believe in them, that you trust them, that you empower them. And it's not by making peace with whatever they're doing. Whatever they do is okay. It's not by helicopter parent and like constantly checking what they're doing. It's by giving them a challenge and encouraging them when you see that they make a step to go to that challenge. So the idea of cleaning our glasses means that when something happens, instead of right away defining the child's actions as being bad. But just like we learned the Talmud, there's Rashi in the Talmud, there's Tosfos in the Talmud. So too, when you see behavior of your child, you have to look at, you have to use Tosfos, you have to use Rashi. What's going on behind the child? Why is the child saying, "I hate mommy"? What's going on? The child feeling angry. And help the child understand that there's more than one feeling going on over here. There's words. The child might say, "I wish you die." What does the child mean when he says, "I wish you die"? It means, "I wish you go away." That's what the child means. He doesn't have other words. It's, "I wish you die." It doesn't mean that. So the parent has to be the nasi, has to be the one to lift up the child and to show and to give the child the love that the child needs to build his backbone. When the parents see good in the child and they believe in the good in the child, what happens? The child appreciates the parents, and it's synergistic. Reciprocal. It goes back and forth. The parents see good in the child, and the child wants to hear from the parents that believe in the child. So this is the Torah's message over here from Rasan. Torah is telling us that the leaders of the tribe, they were missing that. They didn't see that. They didn't lift the Jewish people up. There was a great Rosh Yeshiva, Torah giant, his name is Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach. He heard this story from someone who heard from him directly. He was in Israel, in Jerusalem, by the Western Wall. He's looking at the Western Wall and just like staring at the Western Wall. And as soon as that's interesting, like maybe, I don't know what they thought, but for a long time, he said, "What is he seeing?" And then they realized he wasn't staring at the Western Wall. He was staring at these Chabad people who were standing by the Western Wall, but on film with people. And they asked him, "What do you see, Rabbi Auerbach? Why are you so impressed by this?" He said, "Amazing, amazing." He says, "I know many great, great rabbis who believe in Hashem, absolutely. Their trust in Hashem is infinite, infinite trust in Hashem." He says, "But the Rebbe, he's the only one I know who believes in the Jewish people. If you would have told me that someone would come and put their parents' film and ask everyone who's not religious to go put on film, and people would stand in line, 'Hey, I want to put on film,' as you see in Israel today, unbelievable what's going on. All these people who never before considered tzitzis and tefillin as something that's valuable, all of a sudden, so many people, hundreds and thousands of people, are putting on tzitzis and tefillin." So he said, I never would have believed it. But the Rebbe believes in the Jewish people. The Rebbe sees the Jewish people as who they really are. And this is the first and most important ingredient in empowering your spouse, empowering your children. It could be that there's a scuffle and there's words that are used that aren't so helpful. But if you look past that, and you look beneath the surface, and you try to find the good, you bring out the best in the person in your life. You bring out, when you look for it and you believe in it, bring out their best. I'll tell you one more interesting thing from the Zohar. I'll let you guys go. The Zohar says that why is it that the leaders of the tribe brought the diamonds for the Kohen Gadol's breastplate? He said because the Kohen Gadol, by him wearing the Choshen Mishpat, it was an atonement for for arrogance. And that's why they had to donate for the Choshen Mishpat, just take away the arrogance. So it's our, what prevents us from seeing the good in others and feeling the good in others is our own arrogance. It's our own glasses. And the more we are willing to accept our own shortcomings and appreciating other people and realizing that a lot of it has to do with a reflection of ourselves, the more we get better at it. And the our glasses get cleaner and cleaner until we're able to empower more and more people with what they need to be empowered by, with trust, with love, with kindness. And that's how bring Mashiach with this. Any questions or comments or criticism? Yes, sir.
Is your connection with Ayin Tov in this?
Yeah, Ayin Tov, exactly. Ayin Tov. Looking with a good eye, 100%. That's exactly the idea. Okay. Mendel Futterfass used to say the best character trait is Ayin Tov. Why? Ayin Tov, he says, if you have an Ayin Tov, you have a good eye, you have a generous eye, you're always happy. Why? What makes a person, what makes your animal soul happy? Everyone has a different animal soul. So one person's animal soul is happy because he gets a new car, because he gets a steak, because he gets a new house, because he got engaged, because he got a new suit. Someone's always getting something good. If you have a generous eye, you're always happy. So, because, oh, look at that. Oh, I'm so happy. Look what this person got. That's the Mendel Futterfass. If you can master Ayin Tov, you walk around. Like a million, but the main thing is, if you're Ayin Tov, you bring out the best. You actually reveal the goodness that's there. L'chaim, l'chaim v'rach.